Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, reporting for duty.
And now for this week's conundrum, the bad boys of Star Trek.
Cam, that, you know, a lot of people may not even have any idea what this conundrum even means, but I'm here to inform everybody. Cameron, this is the Urban Dictionary definition of bad boy.
Oh, dear.
You can probably relate to a lot of this here, you know. A young man who has many characteristics of a naughty boy. He's independent and willful. He does what he wants when he wants. He doesn't follow trends. They follow him. He often looks scruffy, but hip. He's not looking for trouble, but there's a sense of danger about him. For these reasons and more, he's irresistible to women. He's a heartbreaker with a 5 o'clock shadow. Cam, my prototypical bad boy is like Dylan from Beverly Hills 90210. But tell me what inspired you for this particular topic here.
Well, it's funny. There was like kind of a perfect storm of events that inspired this episode. We've been talking to...
You were at the observatory and your best buddy got shot by the police. And...
No, it wasn't that. Obviously we've been talking to former Fallen co-host Benjamin Yong. Yeah. I mean, you don't need a bigger sign of, bad boy than Star Trek podcasting's biggest bad boy.
Oh, he's a heartbreaker.
Yeah. But no, it was actually, I was at work walking past like magazines and they had the latest issue of Star Trek magazine. And it was the bad boys of Star Trek.
Really?
And it had like Archer on the cover and Kirk. And I was like, that is something that had never occurred to me. Because if there's one thing I think bad boys, it's not Star Trek. Do you remember Saved by the Bell?
Yeah.
Where it would be like, you know, like Zach Morris. He's the bad boy of Bayside. And he's like, come on, kids, we got to clean up the school. Like, that is such a cheese ball idea of the bad boy.
Well, who is your, you know, envisionment of a bad boy?
Han Solo.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, that is it. Like, honestly, like Han Solo has it all. He has, I think, that ruthless, kind of dangerous edge, but he's, like, has that sort of magnetism that draws people in. Like, I think, like, bad boy is something that, like, it's easy to say just who someone is just, like, kind of a douche, which yeah. I think we might talk about with Star Trek. And, you know, whereas I think there's something more, like, to do with charisma,
there's
magnetism.
There's a little je ne sais quoi.
Yeah. You know? Sort of a hard edge a little bit.
And I don't think, you know... Here's the thing, when we're going through this, we're not talking about badasses. You know, there's a certain thing about what makes a bad boy. I think one of it is, as you said, that magnetism. I think he's got a little charm when it comes to the ladies.
Or just in general.
Yeah.
Like, the people might follow him to a certain degree, yeah.
And as you said before, he's got an edge to him.
A bit of an outsider quality, yeah. I mean, I think all these things kind of add up.
And what we're really examining is, I think, you know, the writers start off with certain intentions about, oh, this is going to be the bad boy of our series.
Right.
And I think what you and I will be examining is whether they're successful in delivering a bad boy. And it could be a casting issue. Maybe things change from early on in the seasons, or I don't know.
And I think, you know, a lot of this is wish fulfillment for the writers, because
oh, yeah.
I don't think in the large crews of Star Trek writers, there's a lot of bad boys.
Oh, I think Ira Stephen Barrell is, with his multicolored facial hair.
He's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I feel like they wrote a lot of these characters, like how they envisioned them, but they were from a very square point of view.
Sure.
And I just had a larger question, you know, after I'd seen that magazine, that had been for some reason bouncing in my head, just like I thought it was kind of silly. I was watching Voyager, and Tom Paris had an episode where he was talking about what a rebel he was and all that.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know, I think I texted you, and I was like, I don't even think Star Trek knows what a bad boy is.
I remember that text message, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's kind of what spawned this episode. And I think it's an interesting question, because Star Trek kind of wants to have its cake and eat it too. It wants to have these characters who are kind of like rebellious, and you know, all the women love them and whatever. But at the same time, they're like hardworking, determined to like follow Starfleet rules and regulations.
Oh, they have a sense of duty, all right.
Yeah. So it kind of, these two things cancel each other out.
Well, so going forward, the litmus test for you as we examine all these characters will be Han Solo. And for me, it's going to be Dylan from 90210.
Very different experiences growing up watching pop culture.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's start off. I mean, part of what inspired you was one, Jonathan Archer. Let's start off with Enterprise.
Yeah. So let's work through the crews, and then maybe after that, we'll get to some examples that maybe fit better within the Star Trek universe.
Sure. Cameron, is Jonathan Archer the bad boy of Enterprise.
No, well, maybe. Maybe of Enterprise, but no, I don't think he applies.
Here's the thing, like, out of all the main characters, and we're not going to be kind of gender neutral here. I'm afraid we'll do, like, a great female-focused episode later on down the road, but we're going to have to be kind of jerks about this, and we're going to have to be, you know, talking about men, unfortunately, for an hour.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll set the timer now.
But here's the thing. So if we look at what a bad boy is, John Archer, is he a ladies' man? I guess compared with, like, say...
Not really.
But compared with, say, Reed or, you know, Mayweather.
Right.
Perhaps. I don't know. Maybe not with Tucker. It's kind of tough to say.
Does he strike you as having a little bit of a James Dean quality or anything, or a rebellious streak?
There was that episode where he took the prototypical Warp 4 craft and used it without permission, like taking your dad's Corvette out while he's away at Lake Titicaca for the weekend or something, you know?
Right. Or, I mean, there's an episode where he, you know, throws the guy in the airlock.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to me, these are not exactly moments that represent the the character of Archer. To me, Archer is a very kind of a straight arrow kind of guy who maybe gets pushed to the brink a little bit, where he does some maybe sketchy things.
Season 3 for sure.
Yeah, but I don't see the character as being
a bad
boy.
That's
the other thing about we say about bad boy. I think there's a certain amount of gray with a bad boy. I don't think it's black and white sort of thinking. You know, I don't think they're, you know, villains or they're heroes. It's like there's a little bit of anti-hero maybe, or a little bit of just kind of straddling the line.
Yeah, I think we may go through some names here and people are going to exclaim, Michael Eddington. And I'm just like, well, here's the thing. Does he strike you as a bad boy? I'm skipping ahead a little bit to, you know, Deep Space Nine, but I'm just saying, like, a character like Michael Eddington, he may be an antagonist, you know, but I don't think just being an antagonist makes you a bad boy.
No, I would agree with you.
Okay, so we don't think Archer is. What about, I think Trip might be the next contender.
Not a chance.
Is it because he's too much of, like, a good old
Southern
guy?
Gentleman. Yeah.
And
too honorable.
Yeah, and we look at Reed and Mayweather, they have almost no personality.
Mayweather I would discount right off the bat.
Yeah.
Reed, I think, is maybe the closest.
Because he's so awkward around women, though.
That's the thing.
Okay,
I feel like the character has elements that are bring him maybe to being the closest within the crew.
Yeah.
But I don't think he fits the bill. You know, he's like the one who dies alone.
That's true, from E-Squared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like... kind of reclusive, he's off to himself, which I guess kind of fits, but he's not in a cool way.
Yeah,
he's just kind of he's almost like, it's weird, he's almost written as like kind of like one of the nerdier characters, but Dominic Keating does not give off a nerd vibe.
No, so when we're at a convention and he's very popular with the ladies.
Keating in real life, maybe the bad boy of Star Trek.
I absolutely believe it. Oh yeah, he's got an edge to him.
He does.
Anybody who sees him do karaoke, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've discounted the entire main cast, Cam. Yeah. What about the supporting cast, some of the recurring characters? I've got an idea for a bad boy. Let me just... I know you're you got somebody to say. I'm just going to get it out of the way. Chef. Chef is obviously the bad boy of Enterprise, right?
I mean, if you're played by Jonathan Frakes, sure. Yeah.
No, but go on. I think we both have kind of the same idea.
Shran probably fits the bill.
I think
better.
That's the closest thing Enterprise has to a bad boy. He's got an edge to him, but he's not morally black or white. He's got kind of this gray to him. The only thing is, I mean, we do see that he has
danger.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he's got just even using like racial slurs to refer to humans as pink skins, you know?
Right.
Danger follows him.
Right.
And if we're talking about kind of, you know, the luck with the ladies, he does have the other commander, you know,
Talia.
Yeah, yes.
he had a choice between arresting her and mating with her.
Well,
my.
Okay. Well. So yeah, we agree. Shran is a bad boy.
Yeah, I mean, and
not Admiral Forrest.
As Jeffrey Combs said when he came up with the, you know, when he was kind of creating the character of Shran, he based it on Jimmy Cagney.
Okay.
I mean, perfect choice if we're going to talk about, you know, the sort of the bad boy model, if you will. I mean, Jimmy Cagney is pretty perfect, and he said...
That's why Chief Wiggum is the bad boy of The Simpsons.
He's Edward G. Robinson.
Oh, sorry, yeah, yeah. that was a dumb mistake. Anyway, go on.
But no, yeah, so he said, you know, that Schran is a tough little guy who holds his ground, and you've got to go through him, not around him.
Yeah.
That's really right. You know, he's kind of, like, I think the bad boy thing, too, it sort of has a chip on his shoulder.
And here's the thing, it's part of, like, kind of the conscious decision on the part of the actor, because if you look at Jeffrey Combs' other performances, like, would you call Wei-Yun, or, like, a bad boy?
No.
Yeah.
No, he's pretty much a straight-up lunatic.
So that's why I think, like, Jeffrey Combs is bringing that to the character and making it work, in my opinion.
And that's the thing, you know, a lot of these characters, there's no grounds within what the cast have said about these characters. This is one of the few where it's specified, like Jimmy Cagney. A lot of it is like, you know, I see him as a man just trying to do right for the galaxy or something, you know, it's like, okay, sure.
Next convention, I'm going to go up to the mic and ask various actors, what bad boy, classic bad boy, did you base your performance on?
Yeah.
There's going to be Humphrey Bogarts and, you know, but no Clark Gables, I don't think so.
No, it's a little too far back, I guess, for them.
Okay. Cam, I'm done when it comes to Enterprise. Any bad boys there. But you know what? Maybe the biggest bad boy of all, Cam, in our next series here, the original series. Let's just get it out of the way. Do you think Captain Kirk is the biggest bad boy of the original series? Is there any competition?
I mean...
Or does he even qualify as a bad boy, in your
opinion?
I
don't think he qualifies.
Okay, tell me why, because I think if you look at the franchise... I think he's the closest thing that the original series has to a bad boy.
I would not disagree with you in that assessment, but I don't think he really applies.
Okay, tell me why.
Kirk was such a hardworking student.
Yeah.
He was so dedicated to Starfleet. He was very narrow-focused, like, hardworking guy, working his way up the fleet. You know, you can say, I guess, some of his behavior on some of the missions has sort of a bad boy edge to it, but a lot of the time it's about, you know, doing the best for his crew, doing the best for his ship, doing the best for the mission. It's more of like a cowboy way of doing things than necessarily being sort of a lone wolf, if you will.
And I think like he was considered to be somebody who's a little bit more reckless at times, but does that mean he has like this dark edge to him?
I don't think so.
Yeah, and I would say that he is a tortured character, you know, to a degree, but I don't think, you know, he is my, you know, equivalent of a Dylan.
No, Dylan. But when you get to even, like, the films, do you think Shatner's playing him that way really at all?
No, not as a bad boy. Even just see how he did with Dr. Jillian Taylor.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more to do with, like, Kirk just does what he has to for the mission and for his people. And I think that is the key difference. It's like, he doesn't have the loner, you know, mentality. He's not out for kind of number one.
Yeah. Well, so if not Kirk here...
Well, I don't think anyone else on the crew applies at all.
Yeah.
But I would say, let's talk a little bit about the new movie version of Kirk.
Because, yeah, absolutely.
I think that Kirk applies more.
I absolutely agree, because we essentially meet him as an adult.
Yeah.
He's starting bar fights, you know, he's kind of a loser, but like this loner as well, you know, like somebody who doesn't really want to conform to society's rules. That's why he's driving Corvette, taking dad's Corvette, stepdad's Corvette into the quarry.
It seemed to me that they kind of, it's interesting because I don't see a lot of the established depictions or references to Shatner Kirk in this character in his younger days. I think he has this, like, sort of the swagger and the attitude of Kirk, but this depiction of him in his younger days, to me, feels a little strange.
You know what I think it is they're taking certain qualities and then just exaggerating those qualities. So that's why I can get behind this.
I'm not it doesn't make me angry or anything. I just think it's noticeably different from the depictions of Kirk that we were, or at least the versions of Kirk we were told about.
Well, let me throw this at you, and I'm going to go backwards just a little bit to the Shatner Kirk, and I think this is maybe an argument you can make for him being a bad boy, but the whole Kobayashi Maru simulation. Like, I think you could, and as we got to see in the rebooted films as well, you could make an argument like, hey, this is a guy who's willing to cheat, you know, to, you know, pass the test or whatever, you know, so... Something Zach Morris would do, you know?
Very true.
So,
but you say that, is Zach Morris a bad boy, though?
No.
So then is Kirk really, I mean, someone this obsessed with Starfleet, I don't know. That's...
Okay, but here's the thing. If somebody, if you go to, up to your sister or mm-hmm. my sister mm-hmm. and say, who's the number one bad boy of Star Trek?
Right.
Do you think the number one answer inevitably is going to be Captain Kirk?
I think so, but it comes from sort of a very shallow thinking of the character.
And that's why I'm not saying yeah. you would ask me that question, because right. I think you'd get a very different response. But I think just an average fan might just go, oh yeah, Kirk, he's a bad boy.
Maybe we should take a poll in Vegas this summer. Just ask people.
Like, yeah, like hardcore fans?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that would be intriguing as well, because yeah. we'll be catching them a little bit off guard.
Right.
So it's just going to be whatever their gut instinct tells them.
Right.
Okay, I'm down for that.
Okay, that would be interesting. And then maybe then just ask them who they think Star Trek's biggest quote-unquote bad boy is.
Yeah.
And hopefully by that point we'll have an episode that's sort of like the female variation on this, so we can do, you know, one and the other and then compare.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
I really don't want to do an episode about who the biggest Mary Sue in
no,
all of Star Trek is.
No, please.
That'll
God,
be
no.
very unfortunate.
Yes. But, no, so like, I think there's one thing that really jumped out at me about the sort of the new version of Kirk. Someone posted on a message board, and I wish I could cite them. I wish I could give them out a shout-out for, because I thought this was brilliant, where they were talking about the differences between the two Kirks. And they said that obviously, like, you know, new Kirk was, they kind of picked up the Picard backstory for new Kirk. And I was like, okay. Interesting, because a lot of that does hold true. The way that Picard is depicted in, say, like, Tapestry.
Right.
Or, he, you know, his stories about his old days. That is very much like new Kirk.
A little more reckless.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. There was also the fact that Kirk was promoted from cadet to captain within 24 hours.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, very strong parallels there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if main crew, if the closest we've got is Captain Kirk, and I here's the thing, if somebody would want to argue and insist that he is a bad boy,
yeah.
I'll let them have it. I'm not going to argue that much, but I don't think he necessarily fits the bill.
He's the Zach Morris bad boy.
He's yeah,
he wants
exactly.
to clean up the school.
But I mean, I think there's very strong candidate among, like, you know, some of the ancillary characters mm-hmm. among this. I don't know. I'll just throw that out there. Do you think Khan is...
That's who's on my list.
Okay. Because
yes.
I think he fits the bill when it comes to that charisma with the ladies.
Yeah.
A little bit more moral ambiguity as well. You can kind of understand what his motivation is and why he's doing the things that he's doing. You mm-hmm. know, it makes sense to me.
What I like about Khan, too, is that he operates by himself as a very strong figure.
Yeah.
However, he is also a leader. Like, you see him lead his people. But he lives in both those worlds, like, completely adeptly.
Well, he even had his number one sidekick, Joachim, as played by Judson Scott.
Right. Also a leader of men.
But, I look, he was, like, he seemed to have the sidekick who was saying, you know what, boss, why don't we just go? We've done enough. He's like, no, I'm
yeah.
going my way.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm, that's a bad boy thing to do.
Right. Yeah,
and
no,
man, agree. Those pectorals. I mean, those are bad boys.
Oh, my. So, you know, I was rewatching Space Seed for this episode. And it's interesting, you know, Khan, the version of Khan most people think of is obviously Wrath of Khan, where
yeah.
he's gone nuts. And I don't really consider him kind of a bad boy at that point. I consider him more of a villain.
Sure.
I think when you get to Space Seed, though, he is. And he's
yeah.
referred to at that point as sort of like one of the best of the tyrants. You know, while he kind of ruled over his lands and, you know, in the period of time he ruled in, his, you know, he was known for having far less internal massacres than any of the others.
Well, no, good for him.
No wars of aggression. Like,
he's
he was
the benevolent dictator.
Right, right. Like, you see, I think if it had established him as, like, sinister and doing a lot of horrible things, I would cut him off this list.
Yeah.
I'd be like, you know what, maybe he doesn't apply. I think that there is a certain amount of, like, he was sort of, like, as good as it got within the time he existed.
My main concern about Space Seed, though, is we do see that he partakes in domestic abuse, which is very concerning.
The 60s was a different time in terms
yeah.
of representations, yes.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay, if we're going to do...
Marla McGivers, yeah.
If we include somebody like, say, Khan, what about Brent Spiner's portrayal of Dr. Eric... Soon, you know. Like,
oh my God!
Is he a bad boy?
I guess
from Enterprise.
I guess
sorta maybe. Does he
have sort of a charge to him?
Well,
revealing something on the podcast right now?
Well, I'm just saying, like, after Shran, he may be the next closest thing that Enterprise has to a legit bad boy.
That's really sad and tragic.
Would you argue against that? Who's more of a bad boy? Who fits the bill, him or Archer?
Oh, God, I guess him.
I think so.
I guess.
So. Okay.
That's a pretty sad battle, though.
I went on that tangent there just because we're talking about the kind of the genetic engineering and all that. Yeah. So.
But getting back to Khan, is there more of a bad boy thing to say on your exit than, it is better to rule in hell than serve in heaven?
That's what you said at the observatory as you're screaming to the high heavens. Well, okay, let's continue on here, Cam, with a cast filled with nothing but bad boys here.
Yeah.
Next Generation.
Right.
You brought up Captain Picard, you brought up Tapestry. I was going to bring that episode up. We do have inklings, of course, when we hear about Picard's past at the Academy, how he got into trouble.
Yeah.
Boothby set him straight, you know. You do get the sense, even from his brother Robert, that this guy was, you know, a real handful back in the day.
Hell bent for leather.
Is it just that Picard has just lived so much life by the point that we meet him in Next Generation that he's just like this real stiff dude, that his bad boy days are done? Or do you think he was never truly a bad boy?
I think he was.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like how your parents are really boring? And I don't specify your parents. I mean, everyone listening,
people's
your
parents
are boring.
Yeah.
Your parents weren't boring all the time when they were young.
Yeah.
They did something stupid at some point.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think Picard is like that. He's someone who maybe put all his energy into being kind of reckless, and then at a certain point put all his energy into his passions of archaeology and living like a monk.
Look at Shinzon, and you can kind of get the sense, when Picard was in his 20s, he was a bad boy. Just based on kind of genetics, if that, you know.
Because, I mean, the term reformed bad boy exists for a reason.
Yes.
It does happen. And Picard is the ultimate reformed bad boy in Star Trek.
Well, that's why after you got back from the observatory, Cam, I patted you on the back and said, you're officially a reformed bad boy now. So, So young Picard, bad boy.
Yeah.
Old Picard, reformed bad boy.
Right.
Does that make Picard a bad boy? Would you call the character of Captain Picard a bad boy?
I would specify that only pre, however age. But, well, when he was in the Academy and maybe a bit younger, that's about it.
Maybe it was just that stab to the heart that did it.
Yeah, like those Nausicaans took away the bad boy edge.
I would agree with that. I would not call Picard a bad boy. Here's the thing. I think when we start off with Next Generation, I really believe it was the writer's intent to make Riker the bad boy of this cast. Do you agree?
Yeah, I would agree.
How successful do you think they were?
They were successful.
Because he's got kind of the ladies' man vibe to him, so he feels that. But here's the thing. Does he have an edge, really?
No, and I would actually say that Riker is an alpha male. He's not a bad boy.
And it's such a... He's got such a sense of duty.
The two can't line up, but...
Yeah. He is so adamant about, like, duty and the importance of the uniform and everything. He's just not a bad boy, you know? Like, who is the edgiest member of that Next Gen cast?
Geordi. No, I'm kidding.
Do you think it's Worf, maybe?
I think Worf, and I think there's a real conversation there, because I think you would argue that maybe Worf is, by compared to the other humans, but then is every Klingon more of a bad boy than Worf?
Because, like, Worf is, like, the crustiest, like, no-fun Klingon you'll ever meet.
Right.
So it's just kind of like, if he's the bad boy, you know, what does that really mean?
Right.
But I think, Worf pulls some shit that you're like, how does he remain in Starfleet? You know, whether he's going around killing, like, members of rival houses, you know. We had that discussion about, like, whether to court-martial certain characters.
Yeah.
And I think we realized that Worf pulled more shit than anyone else.
Yeah, and in that episode, we really began to realize the immensity of everything he'd done. Like, with spaced out over several episodes, you don't tend to think about that hard about all the things he's done.
Yeah.
When you list them off in about 15 seconds, you're like, oh my God.
But in the other thing, like, the other category we have here is, like, whether they're... have some charm with the ladies.
Yeah.
Picard, like, he was dating, he had a lot of, like, you know, mates. He had, you know, Kalar, he had Troy. There's two.
Well, Jadzia, once you get to DS9, you know, I think we can just talk about Worf, the whole picture.
You want to include the Deep Space Nine? Okay, I think that's fair, because he's killing Gowron in Deep Space Nine. There's an absolute edge to Worf. And that sense of duty that he has to uniform is not as strong as you would have with Riker. Of course, there's the episode where he and Jadzia go on that mission to save a diplomat, and he lets the diplomat die so that he can save Jadzia's life.
Right.
I don't know if Riker would have necessarily made that same decision for, say, his fiance. I don't know. Maybe he would have. I mean, it's tough. If, let's say, he was engaged to Troi, then I'm sure he would have made that decision. But I don't know. I the way Worf's written, his sense of duty to the uniform, his sense of honor as a Klingon is massive, but not the same sense of duty that maybe Riker has.
I agree, and I think it's interesting to kind of go down the checklist of the sort of the bad boy qualifications for Worf. I mean, we could say, you know, he is a bit of a loner.
Yeah.
He does have that sort of dangerous kind of charisma, I think. He does have, obviously, appeal to several of the women in the show.
He's not looking for danger, but it often comes to him.
Yeah, he kind of exists outside of sort of the societal norms. He doesn't fit into Klingon society, doesn't fit into Starfleet society. So
I think Worf, and I don't think there's any ambiguity here, I think Worf is a legit bad boy. Like,
what are the things that stop you from initially naming it? To me, part of it is the fact he's played as such a doofus so often. Like, a lot of the humor of the
Next
show...
Next Gen, for sure, yes.
Yes, and even DS9 to a certain degree, a lot of the humor plays on Worf being very, like, awkward and stilted and kind of a little... almost dense.
Judah, I think part of it is we go into... okay, maybe as some appeal to the women.
Yeah.
But would you call Worf a charismatic guy? I mean, I think he's a great character, like, that people love, but as an individual person, I don't think he's got that charisma that, you know, like, draws people to the typical bad boy.
No, I agree. I agree.
So I think maybe that would be why, honestly, when I started doing research for this, I didn't really think of Worf as a bad boy.
No.
You know, so I think now he's probably the biggest bad boy Next Gen has.
Now, do you think that is, while you can say he is that out of a very shallow pool?
Yes.
And would...
and I think it's also just by accident. I don't think it's a conscious decision on the part of the writers either.
And how much do you think DS9 contributes to that versus just TNG?
You know, that's a good question, but I would still say that if he never moved on to Deep Space Nine, he would still be the biggest bad boy of Next Generation, just based on what we saw in Next Gen.
Right.
So, but it's so weird because, like, so much of the time, and it's funny, just as I'm going through my Blu-ray sets, like, he is just such in the background for so much of the series that he's not, like, on Deep Space Nine. Like, he's way more on the forefront and much more integral character on Deep Space Nine than he ever was on Next Gen, which is so surprising, you know, to me. But I don't know. I say, Worf, bad boy.
Now, I'm curious then, would you say, without going into maybe some of the people you're going to name coming up, that all Klingons basically apply for this category?
Yeah, Alexander Oshenko, total bad boy. There's your answer, Cam.
Obviously, but, like, you know, do the others fit in? Like, because we meet so many Klingons throughout the series, you know, like...
You know what? I say no. And maybe when we get into Deep Space Nine, we can go into more detail.
Sounds good.
What about recurring characters from Next Gen, Cam? Is there anyone who jumps out to you? I think I know who you want to bring up, but I'll let you go for it.
Well, recurring, I have a one-time... character.
Alexander Rozhenko is in more than one episode, Cam.
No, I want to talk about Thadian Okona.
Good enough.
From the episode The Outrageous Okona.
Yes.
Now, I talked at the top of this episode how I based a lot of my perception of what to measure as a bad boy in this episode as Han Solo.
Right.
If ever Han Solo showed up on TNG, it was this character.
Yeah, I went back and rewatched clips from that episode.
Yes.
Okay, my only issue with him, though, is, like...
I think there's a few issues with him.
He's putting out way too much of, like, the charm, like, hey, ladies, I'm just so cool to hang out with. Like, to me, that's not a bad boy. The bad boy... Cam, we're going to do a reenactment. Okay. Just ask me how I'm doing.
How are you doing?
I don't know. Ask me sometime later.
Okay, Clint.
Okay, you know, I just... I don't think people understand me, man.
Right.
You know, to me, that's the bad boy, you know, just mm-hmm. like kind of like that darkness. And
yeah.
Is he a dark character?
No. Billy Campbell plays him as... He wants to be Han Solo, but he's a little too bubbly.
Yeah, but that's just it. Because we're talking about, like, Riker was intended to be the bad boy.
Yeah.
Billy Campbell was, I think, the number two guy to play Riker in this series mm-hmm. as well. So that's why I'm convinced that they gave him this role as the actual bad boy.
Was this a good second opportunity?
Yes, oh, so memorable.
You know, when we are introduced to Thadian... You know, he's accused of impregnating the leader of the, Atlek's daughter. And, you know, but then, and you're like, okay, well, maybe he fits the bill. But then ultimately the resolution is that he was actually just covering for someone from the Strahleb people's son.
Yeah, he's got a sense of duty and honor.
Yeah, it's like two warring factions. It's like the children from each side are in love. I mean, it's like, okay, so now he's kind of the honorable guy who's just, you know, helping love along. It's like, oh, so he's kind of the, I guess, rascal with a heart. He's more of a rascal with a heart of gold.
Yeah, I would buy that.
Yeah. I did have some Cam fiction for this episode.
Dear Lord.
So I only have one this week.
Good.
But in the myriad universes, the embrace of cold architects.
Did you just say myriad universe?
That's what it said online.
Oh, I thought you were talking about mirror universe.
No, it said myriad universe.
What the hell is the myriad universe, Cam?
I don't know, but let me get to this fact.
This is why I don't like Cam fiction.
Oh, God. So in this story, the embrace of cold architects, Okona is recruited by Riker to take over hosting duties in 10 Forward after Guinan leaves.
Wow.
So remember,
I need to get me that Cam fiction right away.
So when, you know, we did an episode a while ago on Star Trek revivals, maybe in the TNG revival, Okona is the head of 10 Forward.
Maybe not. Maybe if you do your own Star Trek The Next Generation Continues, your own fan film, you can make that happen. And you can play him.
Oh my God.
But you'll wear a Guinan hat. And with a ponytail sticking out.
That's amazing. Someone make fan art of that. Okay, so let's get to your contenders.
I think maybe this is a toughie. I might make an argument for Q.
He's on my list. He's my other one.
The thing that he's lacking, though, is kind of the charm with the ladies. He is able to sweep Bash away from Picard.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you can make a legit argument that Q is a bad boy.
I think he is.
Yeah. Because
now you're saying the bad boy stole the girl away from the reformed bad boy.
Yeah. So that works.
Maybe Vash has a type.
Yeah. You know, what is it about Q that... Because here's the thing. Like, is Q an antagonist or is he just a villain?
I think he's an antagonist. I don't think he's a villain.
Is he morally gray ever?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I think if he were a villain, I wouldn't include him on this list.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think he does apply. He definitely has sort of that hint of danger, but he's not someone that when Q pops up, you're not like, well, here's evil. He's not the Borg queen or something like that. You know, he's not someone who instantly just exudes evil.
Yeah.
He has a certain threat to him, but he's playful, he's charming, he's funny.
He's got the charm, and I think that's key to a lot of our bad boy discussion here.
Right.
And that's why we were probably a little hesitant to include Worf in it, but I don't know. I think Q does fit the bill for a bad boy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got that moral ambiguity where I don't really just see him in black and white, and I think that's intriguing. I don't know. And he does have that danger that comes with him.
Right.
You know, like... He's willing to let, you know, Wesley get stabbed to death with a bayonet, you know. So
well, I think most people would do that.
Okay.
But. Yeah, so I think he does apply. And now, you could say maybe certain episodes he doesn't. Like, especially the really broadly comedic Q episodes.
Yeah.
You might be like, this guy's more of just like a clown.
Have you gotten to the Q Continuum Civil War episode yet on Voyager, Cam?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. I wouldn't call him a bad boy really in Voyager, though. Like,
he's
doing bubble baths with Janeway, but they're the least sexy bubble baths you could ever imagine, in my opinion.
Maybe a little bit of the flirting with Janeway, I would say.
Okay.
A little bit of that edge to
it. I do like how he is able to flirt with her, and that's not something he did with Picard, and
Sisko.
He just got punched in the face by Sisko.
Well, I like that with Q, they figured out a way to make him have a different type of relationship with Janeway.
Yeah.
Because I think the problem was they never figured out a relationship for him and Sisko.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, Picard and him definitely was very much like a straight man, you know, comedian type of relationship.
I just wonder if Avery Brooks and John DeLancey had immediate chemistry,
yeah,
he would have been brought back for Deep Space Nine. There just wasn't chemistry between those two actors, unlike what you saw with the other captains that he encountered.
I can't imagine why those two actors didn't have chemistry.
Do you think, was there anybody on the set who entered the set of Deep Space Nine not, you know, shaking in their boots by Avery Brooks, just intimidated by the man?
Well, yeah, what do you think, kind of on a little bit of a tangent, sure, what kind of actor do you think it takes to have chemistry with Avery Brooks? Because he is an imposing, kind of scary guy.
Who had chemistry with him? Because here's the thing, like, he seemed like he was in full command of everybody,
yeah,
at all times. And that's, yeah, a very different kind of role that we see from the other captains, you know? Right. And I'm not saying like he didn't interact, you know, in an interesting, intriguing way with any of the other characters, but I don't know. Like, I wouldn't say that Michael Dorn and Avery Brooks oozed chemistry when they're in scenes together.
No.
You know? But I don't know. I loved all the interactions between him and Terry Farrell.
What about, was it Penny Johnson?
Yeah.
Who played Cassidy Yates?
They did have chemistry, though.
I think so, too.
You know, and I wonder what that was. Did you see Penny Johnson in any of their other roles? She was on 24, and she was on the Larry Sanders Show.
No.
She was, like, she's actually very charismatic in, mm-hmm, those roles. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, just the actors playing off of Avery Brooks, knowing what to do, you know, like how to interact with them.
I think with her, it's sort of that low-key disarming sweetness.
Yeah.
Which Avery Brooks does not exude.
But I don't know. Who do you think out of the main cast played off him best on Deep Space Nine?
The main cast?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Sirach Lofton.
I was actually thinking about that as well. Yeah. And I think he, Sirach Lofton, Terry Fell were probably, you know, those are the top contenders right there.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay, sorry, back to Bad Boys, Cam.
Yeah, I mean, do we have anything left to add for TNG?
Not for TNG on my account. What about you?
I wish I did have more, because, I mean, obviously Data is not up for this one. Geordi...
He's got the cool shades.
Geordi, definitely not.
Just go watch Galaxy's Child. That's all you have to do.
Geordi is more the writers, Star Trek writers, writing the Bad Boys.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think Barkley is...
Or Wesley.
Yeah, or Wesley.
Despite what Ben Yong might say.
But, okay, well, let's go right back into Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Let's just start off like we have with all the other series, with the captain.
Right.
I don't consider Sisko to be a bad boy, even though he falls within, you know, you can check the box next to his name on a lot of these categories. He has an edge to him, and I don't, mm-hmm, in the way that I don't think any of the other captains have an edge to them. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, when you watch an episode like In the Pale Moonlight, he has that sort of, like, ruthlessness. The question is, does Sisko have, like, a charisma?
Yeah, and I definitely see him as a commanding presence.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, this electric personality that just draws people in, I never really saw evidence of that, you know.
I would say he makes people more uncomfortable.
Yeah, like, people are just like, oh, I need to smarten up in front of him, you know. Because I think part of the Bad Boy is people see that, like, darkness, and they're drawn to it. They're like, mm-hmm, oh, I need to discover more about this person. Whereas Sisko, they see the darkness, and they're like, holy shit, I need not cross this man.
Yeah, he's more, like, edgy, and I think he would make people more kind of nervous and sort of on their toes. I think he's a great leader, and I think, I look forward to, you know, any episodes where we could talk more about him as a character.
Yeah.
But I don't think that he really fits the bill here. I think he's got just kind of boundless potential as a Starfleet officer, and I think the key to his success is that he can think outside the box and make the sacrifices that others wouldn't.
Do you think of him as a company man? Because you have stuff like In the Pale Moonlight, which is such a betrayal of the uniform.
Yeah.
But I would definitely consider him like kind of a careerist, you know.
He's very focused on what Starfleet needs and wants.
But it's interesting. You and I had a discussion last week about whether, or maybe 2 weeks ago, about whether Sisko would ever become an admiral.
Yeah.
And we both realized, no, like, he's, if he ever returns, you know, from the Celestial Temple,
mm-hmm,
we don't think he's going to pursue a career in Starfleet again, you know? Right. So it's interesting that he is such a careerist, you know, like, with Starfleet, but I don't know. Like, I just don't see him as a bad boy because of that particular attribute. And also, just, like, he's not a ladies' man, I'd say.
No, not at all.
Like, he had a wife. He had two wives throughout the series, but it wasn't like he was out there on the town in the promenade, you know.
Sisko is actually not a sexualized captain at no. all, really.
Well, there's the bathing suit that he wore.
In the emissary. But, I would say he might be the least so of any of the captains. I think he probably is.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, like, Picard drinks tea with bare-chested all the time.
Yeah, and you have, like, an episode like Captain's Holiday.
Yeah.
You know, Picard definitely has his moments. You know, you see him, like, not an episode that's necessarily sexualized, but you see him, you know, stripped down in a Chain of Command, whereas you would not see that from Avery Brooks.
Well, I wonder, do you think... Because that's so strange, because you do see kind of sexualization of, like, all the captains to a certain degree. Do you think that was the writer saying, no, this is not going to work for Avery Brooks, or do you think it's Avery Brooks saying, no, this is not going to work for me?
Or it could just be the show.
Yeah.
You know, the other ones were going for a different type of vibe or tone. I don't think DS9 was really going for that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, they did that with some of the other characters. I mean, look at the Intendant.
Again, Mirror Universe.
Mirror Universe, yeah, of course.
And we actually should state up front, we decided not to include Mirror Universe characters in this episode.
It'd be too easy.
It would just be a list of Mirror Universe characters, yeah. And we may talk about them very, very soon.
Yes. But, okay, well, moving on from Sisko.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, among the main cast, we discussed Worf. I don't think O'Brien fits the bill.
Yeah, I had O'Brien as a list of a contender, but I don't think so.
It's, I mean, he does have that edge to him, especially when we're talking about, like, his days, you know, in the Cardassian War.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have that kind of charisma or charm with the ladies or anything like that.
He's more of a beta kind of guy. Happily so, I think. He's very comfortable, I feel like, in his own skin.
Yeah.
But he's just kind of very low level, very... He's not flashy, and I think, like, bad boys, you got to be a little bit flashy. O'Brien is the antithesis of flashy.
So, with remaining, like, male cast members, I don't think you're going to get that from Jake Sisko. I don't think he's a bad boy, necessarily.
And Bashir is definitely not.
Well, let's talk about Bashir, though.
Oh, you think he is?
He's got the charm with the ladies, does he not?
Yes.
When the series starts, he's just kind of a very green young officer, kind of doofusy. But he does develop a little bit of an edge to him, you know, as we discover his dark secret that he's genetically engineered.
Right.
But I don't know, is there much moral ambiguity to Bashir?
No, he's like full excited to be in Starfleet. He wants adventures.
Yeah.
To me, there's no like real edge to Bashir whatsoever.
You can, well, I do say that the genetic engineering revelation does give a little bit of the edge, but I just, other than the charm and that little hint of darkness, I don't think he would be considered a bad boy.
Would you say there's anything gray about Bashir?
No.
I mean, maybe Section 31 a little bit, but...
But he spurns Section 31, yeah, exactly. So it's just kind of like, I don't think
we might reconsider him.
Yeah. So here's the thing. We've got two male cast members left, and I think you can make a particularly strong argument for at least one of them.
Okay.
But let's start with Odo. Does he have any charm with the ladies?
No.
None. I think he's just automatically disqualified.
I guess he did when it counted.
When it counted, but I mean, he is a loner.
Yes.
There is some moral ambiguity there when he's dealing with a female shapeshifter during the Dominion War arc.
Right.
But there's just no... In much the same way that I feel like Odo is a great character, much like Worf, there's no kind of natural charisma or magnetism that he embodies or anything like that. Cam, I think the strongest contender for a bad boy on Deep Space Nine among the main cast...
Quark. I think he actually fits the bill.
I think he totally does. Yeah. He's got the moral ambiguity. We've seen in the past he's been good with the ladies. Like, you know, like he's been able to charm, and he can be charming, you know?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people do see through it, you know? Yeah. And I don't know, he's got this charisma to him. Like,
he is at least partly modeled on Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca.
The original bad boy.
Right, there you go. Who's the one who kind of shows some heart at the end.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's episodes where, like, Quark is going to smuggle guns. Like, he has that edge to him.
Yes.
And yes, you know, we see him in like the makeup and he looks kind of weird to us, but within the universe he exists, I think he fits the bill really well.
I mean, he helps like mercenaries like get onto Deep Space Nine and steal the Trill symbiont out of Jadzia. Like, yeah. And he somehow did not end up in jail, but anyway.
Yeah.
Yes, this guy's dangerous as well, mm-hmm. you know, and that never... He does soften by the end of the series, but I think even then he's still a bad boy.
He is definitely an outsider, both within DS9 and within Ferengi society to a certain degree. He never quite fits in Ferengi society.
Brunch is not a fan. The yeah. Negus doesn't really think all that highly of him. Mm-hmm. I do wonder, I don't know, maybe when he was playing, is it Tongo or Domjot? Domjot's, I don't know, do you think the other Ferengi would gang up on him or, I don't know?
Maybe.
I don't know. Yeah, but he is a bit of an outsider as well.
And he's also someone that you, like, if you were an outsider, you might look and be like, he's got, like, darkness in his past.
Yeah.
And he certainly does. But he also gives off such a, like, a... There's, like, he's charming.
Yeah. Oh, so absolutely.
I think Quark is actually a really good suggestion.
Quark is a bad boy of Deep Space Nine.
He is. Okay. Yeah.
Well, let's look at the recurring cast members, because there are some interesting contenders.
And
there.
I should say right up front, in that Star Trek magazine I saw, you know, that called the Bad Boys of Star Trek, almost front and center was Garak on the photo.
Garak, okay.
Yes, which so, I was dubious of, actually.
I'm still a little dubious because, yes, he's morally ambiguous. I think, do you think there's any character that's more morally ambiguous than Garak in all of Star Trek?
No. No, I mean, you could say maybe a Q or something, but no.
Yeah, and so he's got that edge. He's got the charm and the charisma. But I would not call him, like, a typical bad boy, though. Would you?
Would you say he's that charismatic? I don't think he really is.
Really?
I don't get the vibe on that show that other characters like him that much.
I guess I'm just going from my own feelings as a viewer. I'm sucked in by him.
Oh, as a viewer, yes. But within the world of DS9... Characters seem kind of repelled by him.
Not Bashir. Yeah, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But the other thing to bring up is, like, his luck with the ladies. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. If Garak had luck with Bashir, if he was utterly charmed and they had a relationship, I think you could make an argument with that. I don't think it just has to be luck with the ladies, but, like, if you're pursuing someone and they just find you utterly captivating, call him a bad boy. I think that's totally fine. But I don't know. They played his sexuality very ambiguously for the first couple of years. And then all of a sudden he's dating Zial.
Yeah.
And I think it's really by default. And she really never had any sort of like romantic relationship prior to that. Cause she was growing up in like a slave labor camp.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. Does he fit the bill for a bad boy, in your opinion, Cam?
Not really.
Not really to me. And I know there's probably a lot of listeners saying, what are you talking about? He's the biggest bad boy around.
I think there's almost too much of a sinister edge to Garak.
Yeah.
I think like the key to what makes at least the ones we've talked about who passed the line, I think it's that they walk the edge between kind of being threatening and charming.
Yes.
Garak too often tips into threatening.
Yeah.
I think most people would know not to trust him the second they started talking to him.
Yeah.
And he has that weird, like, almost like bird-like way of staring at people.
He almost cocks his head to the side.
I think he would make people uncomfortable.
I agree.
And I think that's the issue.
Well, he'd be a great spy.
Yeah, he wouldn't blend in, though.
You'd certainly remember your encounters with him.
You would, yeah.
Okay.
So, I had an issue with seeing Garak, because the cover art, as I recall, it was Kirk, Archer, Garak, and I can't remember who it was. It was probably Riker.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, so it was kind of like, no. It was a very loose usage of the term, I feel like.
Next time we'll put it together, you'll have, you know, Quark, Worf, all the funny looking aliens.
Okona. he'll sell Zero magazines.
Okay, well, here's the other big one that I think we need to address here is one Dukat.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Dukat a bad boy?
Overall, no. But he is for a while.
Because here's the thing. He does have a certain charm to him.
Definitely. Yeah, we is it a start the Vegas Star Trek con? I believe last year someone asked him about being a sex symbol.
Oh yeah,
and it's like obviously, and this was you know a young woman, and she was quite taken with Descartes, and I think she's not alone.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, there were people like I remember. I Stephen Bear was doing everything possible to write him as this despicable being, and mm-hmm. he was getting pissed off that. Like, there were still people just utterly in love with him.
Yeah.
And, like, making excuses for him. He's like, you've got to be kidding me. This guy's Hitler.
Yeah.
You know? But here's the thing, and that's just it. To me, I have trouble categorizing him as a bad boy because he is so sinister. There's no moral ambiguity. And they very much, by the end of the series, he is evil.
Yeah, I agree. I would completely discount him from this category for the vast majority of his episodes. However, what about the period of time where he has his own bird of prey and he's helping DS9, you know, smuggling the guys over for the Apocalypse Rising, you know, dressed as Klingons?
I think you could, yeah, make an argument for the first, like, 4.5 seasons, you know. Yeah. But I think before he gets the Dominion involved with the Cardassian Union.
What about, though, when he's, like, the uneasy ally?
I like that, you know, yeah, and that's I buy it.
He applies, I think, in that category then.
It's interesting to see him go from kind of antagonist to bad boy / uneasy ally to all-out villain mm-hmm. on this. Like, this is a guy who has an arc on the series, yeah. You know, and I don't know. I just wonder, what would it have taken? What was the moment to you that he stopped being bad boy?
Well, I don't think he started as one necessarily. I think he became one when he, you know, was, again, flying the bird of prey. And he was kind of like the Han Solo figure at that point.
But at what point was he no longer that bad boy?
Once he joined the Dominion.
Yeah.
Like, or once he teamed up with the Dominion.
Okay. Yeah,
that's when it was like all bets were off and he was back to being a villain.
I almost wonder if he could have pushed it a little bit up until the point where he became enamored with the Paw Wraiths.
Right.
And the big magic book.
I don't know. Once you get to, like, Waltz.
Yeah.
He's done.
He's not a bad boy.
No. Okay. Once you're seeing imaginary people. And...
yeah, no. Yeah, Dylan from 90210 would never do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. Well, Cam, do we want to touch upon the Klingons of Deep Space Nine?
Yeah.
Do any of them count as bad boys to you?
Martok comes pretty close.
Here's the thing. He does have Cirilla. Like, he was able to charm her.
Mm-hmm.
But does any other woman on the show find him, you know, charming in a certain way? Is he a ladies' man?
No, but I don't think that's, you know, that's a must tick off. I don't think all the boxes need to be ticked off.
I think enough of them do, but...
Yeah, I would agree, but I think you can kind of let that category, or that one slip. But what about the sort of the charisma, the image he presents, the...
To me, he's not so morally ambiguous, though.
Right.
And he's too jolly to have kind of this darkness to him, you know? Is he a dark guy?
I wouldn't say he's a dark guy, but what about from the point of view of the Starfleet members?
Kind of, hey, we're getting involved with, like, this all-out warrior. Here's the moment, and I brought this up on the Admirals episode, where it's the last episode, and they're on the devastated remains of Cardassia.
Mm-hmm.
Martok's loving it. He's drinking blood wine and celebrating.
Yeah.
It makes you really step back and go, oh, wait, yeah, this guy, he's from a warrior species. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's tough to really get on board with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but otherwise, I don't know. I don't find him to be a bad boy just because, for the most part, he's not morally ambiguous. You know exactly where he stands, and he's not painted in this gray zone at all.
I think, to me, he has more of a magnetism and charisma than almost any other Klingon character I can even name.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how many other Klingon characters can you name? I would not...
Krug.
Well, I wouldn't call Kern a bad boy.
Yeah.
Could you make an argument for Gowron, though? I think you might be able to. More so than Martok.
Really? Interesting.
Just because there's that moral ambiguity going on, for sure.
Yeah.
And he may not be...
Gowron kind of throws too many hissy bits.
Yeah, like, I won't argue.
Cooler.
Martok's definitely cooler, yeah. But there is much more moral ambiguity when it comes to Gowron. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Other than that, I just don't see any of these Klingons as bad boys, really, in my opinion.
Interesting.
So maybe that one dude that we saw in Into Darkness.
Right.
That's pretty bad boy look.
With the piercings, yeah.
Okay. The last Deep Space Nine character I want to bring up, and then I'll let you bring up any on your list, Cam, but Captain Baudet. From all the stories that Jadzia had about the man with a transparent skull, that sounds like a bad boy.
I'll take her word for it. I mean, who am I to disagree with Jadzia?
Who else? Oh, who knows what else is transparent?
Yeah. Well, oh my. Yeah, I don't actually have any others for DS9. That was kind of my total. I couldn't really come up with anyone I felt that compelled by.
What about Damar? Would you make an argument that Damar could be a bad boy? Or he at least, similar to Dakot, maybe he made a temporary transition to bad boy?
Maybe. Like, to me, he's so lunk-headed for the majority of the series. Well, he's invisible for a huge swath of the series.
Yeah, and then he shoots Zial.
Yeah, then he's
or
like
Zial.
Yeah, Zial. And then he's like a drunk for a long time.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, yeah, fine, maybe he had an episode or two, but overall, no.
I just find his arc so compelling, and I think Casey Biggs is such a charismatic actor that I could be swayed in that direction, but... If you're talking about the bad boys of Star Trek, I don't know if you want drunk Damar as kind of the representative of Deep Space Nine.
Probably not.
No. Okay, I think Quark is the unmitigated contender here for bad boys of Deep Space Nine.
I might see the Iggy Pop Horta.
I would love to see an Iggy Pop Horta, but I think you mean Iggy Pop Forta.
Oh, fail.
You know what? They're very close.
Horta would be a whole other thing, and that would be even better.
The Horta bad boys.
Okay. That'd be amazing.
Okay, well, you know what? Let's go to the biggest bad boy of all when we're talking about Star Trek, Cameron.
Chakotay?
Yes. Because here's the thing. I think he was set up to be a bad boy here.
I would agree.
He's a Maquis, so that means moral ambiguity.
Right.
I think they're trying to give him, you know, this edge, you know, especially
with
this...
You do not put that tattoo on someone.
No.
And not expect people to think, at least going into the show, that he's the badass of the
show. Why do you think Mike Tyson got a tattoo like Chakotay's? He saw that, he's like, oh, if Chakotay has one, I want people to make sure that they know that I'm a bad boy too.
That's right.
So, but here's the thing. That's what the writer's intention was.
Yeah.
Do you think either Robert Bertrand or the writers were successful in making Chakotay a bad boy?
No. It's weird because I think, you know, Robert Beltran is a good-looking guy.
Yeah.
He's got a badass look. Like, great, you know, great design on that tattoo. It's just brilliant, you know, design.
You meet him in person, he's very charming.
Very charming, very funny. The character is such a stiff. And it's, and you know what? It's fine if he's a stiff, but the show doesn't give him an inner life that allows us really in to see much.
The closest we got, though, I think was in...
Tattoo?
No, it was in the episode where he was kidnapped by the Kazon, and he was talking to the Maj, it may have been Maj Kala, about Seska. He's like, oh yeah, you remember that mole on her belly?
Right.
And, you know, he's trying to get under his skin. I think that's the closest he becomes to becoming a legit bad boy.
Yeah, but...
Other than that, like you said, he's such a stiff.
He is completely taken off the list just for yelling at two crew members for making out in the turbo lift.
How can you be a bad... Dylan from 90210 would never yell at somebody for making out in an elevator.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, Cam. So
he's off the list. Harry Kim is also off the list.
What about Neelix?
Oh.
Is Neelix a bad boy? He's got a...
Interesting. That is something I had never...
He does have a charm with the ladies. He had Kes. There's also the Talak. You don't know about his inevitable fate, but there is like a Talaxian woman that he ends up meeting.
Is he too much of a people pleaser, though?
You don't get this. Here's the thing. We know about his past, but like when he's on the ship, does he...
He's throwing like parties to make everyone happy.
Yeah, but I mean, even like an episode like Jatrell, you know, like to me it's fascinating because even though he... did not want to participate in this war, it haunts him. He seems like a haunted dude.
Yeah.
You know? He's got a cool look.
He does have a cool look. I mean, I don't know. He's got like rainbow clown pants.
You know? Well, yes, I know. He looks like he should be golfing.
Yeah.
You know?
He's dancing on the holodeck with, like, bikini girls. Like, I don't know. He's too much... You know what? I think maybe you could make an argument for this character if he wasn't written as a buffoon.
Who do you think is more of a bad boy, Chakotay or Neelix?
Oh.
That's a tough one.
I might give Neelix the edge.
I might still give it to Chakotay.
You think you might?
When you're saying bad boy...
Yeah.
I think Chakotay may take it.
I think it's such a sad competition. I think you could flip a coin and pretty much be right either one.
I'm not going to argue with you about that. What about the doctor, though? Do you think the doctor is a bad boy?
No, I don't.
There's no moral ambiguity.
No, straight ahead.
Okay.
Steady as she goes. I don't know if that a doctor can. I think it's harder for a doctor to be one because it's so much about helping others and being the best that you can be, setting the great example, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, I think Robert Picardo is a very charming, charismatic actor, but I don't think the other characters on the show were just utterly charmed by him at all.
In fact, I was just watching an episode where people were complaining about having to spend time with him.
He was, you know, like, he was a bit of a pill, you know? Yeah. Dr. Pun, excuse me for that. But, like, it's just kind of like, okay.
Right.
Cam, I don't think you've gotten to the point where he's really into the holographic camera. Oh, God. He's just, like, taking photos everywhere you go. He's, if he can't go on an away mission, he's asking people to bring the holographic camera with them so that he can take photos.
Okay.
It's just like, this is not a bad boy. Dylan from 90210 would not do that.
So he's just like a nerdy guy with an Instagram account.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
He's, yes, he's the person we're both thinking of. Who's so prolific on social media here in Vancouver, we don't want to name him in case he, like, really ruins our reputation as local podcast heroes.
Right. Well, let's get to the character then that you have to acknowledge as the bad boy of Voyager, as we have been told time and time again, that is Tom Paris.
Is Tom Paris a bad boy to you, Cam?
I would say no.
Okay.
And you know why? Because he's too much like Andrew McCarthy.
Like, wow.
Here's my thing about Tom Paris. Tom Paris is, he is more, and here's the thing I want to say up front. Like, I really enjoy Tom Paris. I really like Robert Duncan McNeil's performance. He's a character who I think is always entertaining to watch. Tom Paris, at least the Tom Paris we are told of when he was a real badass, sounds like a douche. Like, he sounds whiny and entitled.
Yeah.
Like, I had some notes here. You know, what do you think is the number one thing he remembered doing the most in his bedroom as a teenager?
Reading magazines about the 20th century?
No, crying.
Oh.
He said he
Dylan from 90210 probably did that a lot.
True. He said he loved his room because he could lock himself in to cry, play games, and listen to music.
There you go.
I mean, he's emo.
Okay.
I mean, now he did steal his father's shuttle, which landed at the bottom of Lake Tahoe. So I wonder if they took that and added that to Kirk for 2009. Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's rebellious, but he broke out in hives when his first love broke up with him.
We've all been there.
And then he couldn't get out of bed for a week.
Yeah.
You know, I
but that
like
means, you know, like, he's making those connections with women, and, like, he gets heartbroken, too.
But is he too much of kind of a bit of a sad sack?
Here's the thing. I would absolutely argue that Tom Paris is a bad boy.
Really?
I would. I think there's, look, his involvement with the Maquis tells you that there is an edge to him, a little bit of darkness.
He was captured on his first mission.
I know. I didn't say he was a very competent, operative.
Right.
You're going to get to probably my favorite Tom Paris episode later on, which is 30 Days.
Right.
It's where he, that sense of duty that is so important to so many Starfleet officers, he violates that, and he's sent to the brig for 30 days. There is that darkness, and there's that edge to him. He is charming. You hear all the stories about the Delaney sisters.
Right.
You know, he does have that charm with the ladies.
He gives off to me the spoiled rich kid vibe.
Sure.
Like, it's to me a very different thing. He has, like, a preppy look to him. Like,
the popped collar for his polo shirt that he should be wearing.
Yeah.
Like, his name should be, like, Chip Paris.
Would you say Tom Paris gives off a dangerous vibe?
Dangerous.
Edgy.
No, like, not a vibe. Here's the thing. I would argue that he's got a little bit more moral ambiguity than the average officer here.
Yes.
Much more so than, say, Tuvok.
Right.
But here's the thing. If you say Bad Boys of Star Trek to fans in Vegas, I bet after Kirk, a lot of them are going to say Tom Paris. I think there's a legit argument. I don't think he's a very good bad boy.
Mm-hmm. I think he's kind of a failure of a bad boy.
Well, I think that there's going to be a spectrum of bad boys, and I think he's on the lower spectrum of bad boy, but I think he is still a legit bad boy when it comes to Star Trek.
Can you not see him as like an Andrew McCarthy character in like a in a Brat Pack movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, to me, he's that type, or like the James Spader guy.
Yeah.
He's James Spader in Less Than Zero.
Let's tell Robbie McNeil that at the next convention.
He would get a laugh out of it, I think.
Sure.
Okay. There's no way he wasn't compared to Andrew McCarthy a lot of his younger days when he was an actor in the 80s. There's no way that people weren't bringing that comparison.
Was he a bad boy in Masters of the Universe, Cam?
I think he might have been.
Yeah.
He was a musician.
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
there is no way he was not losing jobs to Andrew McCarthy.
Sure. No, I buy it. Yeah. He was a poor man's Andrew McCarthy.
He was.
Okay. So you would would you give me that he's a lame bad boy, or do you think he's just not a bad boy?
To me, he seems more like a brat, just like kind of a snivelly brat.
Okay.
Than like a sort of the bad boy type.
So not a bad boy to you.
He's just more like selfish.
Okay.
Like and self-involved.
If he's in one of those 80s movies, he's from like the rich boy summer camp. That's the rival.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I get the vibe more of. Like I think. You know, a lot of the Voyager show is about his character journey is like realizing this is the best that he's capable of being is on Voyager.
Yeah.
I agree with that. He sounds unbearable outside of it.
I agree. He does kind of seem a little whiny, but
he's crying, Tyler. He's crying in his room.
I still contend that he is a bad boy. He's just not a very good bad boy.
Right.
He's a bad, bad boy, Cam.
So was there any supporting characters on Voyager or anything that popped out to you?
Yeah, you know what? You're not there yet, but one of my favorite episodes, Voyager, Counterpoint, we're introduced to one, Inspector Kashyyyk, from the Devor Imperium. He's got some charm to him. He's got some darkness and moral ambiguity. I don't want to spoil it too much, but essentially... you know, he does strike up a relationship with Janeway. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the most successful depiction of a relationship she ever gets on the series as well.
Right.
You know, a non-holographic one, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, so, and once you get there, you know, I definitely think Inspector Kashyyyk actually fits the bill for a bad boy.
Okay.
The only other one that I'll throw out there just because I want to say his name.
Michael Sullivan?
No. But, Captain Rudy Ransom from Equinox, okay. As played by John Savage.
Right.
John Savage, Rudy Ransom. Which one's the badass stage name? Which one is the badass character name? I couldn't tell you, you know. But here's the thing. There's a lot of moral ambiguity with this captain who appears in the Delta Quadrant. He's a Federation Starship captain as well. So you get the sense that there was a lot that this captain was willing to do to get home that Janeway was not. Mm-hmm. So it's intriguing, you know. Does he have that charm with the ladies? He seems like a charming guy, right. You know. But I don't know. You could make an argument that Captain Rudy is a bad boy.
Okay.
Tootie.
What about that Vidian that wore the guy's face?
I don't think there's much moral ambiguity there. Maybe to you.
Okay, so that's this week's topic of the bad boys of Star Trek. Before we sign off, we got a letter sent in that we are going to read. So this email comes in from Michael Fairchild. Now, just a little bit of background. I think it was our Chain of Command episode where we were talking about whether we had any Canadian listeners or not. And then you, of course, brought up at least the one who made his voice known.
Yeah, our good friend Jamie Davies was very skeptical that we had any fans beyond our own borders.
I was skeptical about within Canada.
Yeah. But yeah, no, we do have a local listener here, and he sent in a great question, Cam.
Yes, so he said, "I am still listening to your podcast, however incomprehensible that may sound. Sincerely, your only Canadian fan." But he said, "P.S., as a scientist, I also would like to suggest you do an episode on the worst scientific errors in Star Trek. I'm not talking about the teching of the tech or super powerful scientician magic, but just ideas about science so obviously wrong that I cringe when I see them. I bet that these are all plot devices, but they don't need to be so obviously wrong. My favorite to hate is 20th century barcode on a single atom. Why?"
I think this is a good question, but Cam, you and I are way too dumb to figure this out within 1 week.
The sad part was, when I looked at his example, I was like, what's wrong with that?
And you told me you know what, Tyler, we're arts majors, so yeah. We may be a little bit out of our depth, but Cam, what we'll do is we'll do a little research over the next week, and we'll come back and we'll answer this question next week, and we'll keep it fun. There are actually a couple things that did spring to my mind, because here's the thing, I may be an arts major, but I am very interested in science and technology. I do follow, like, I do read, like, scientific journals and stuff. Right.
Science for Kids is not a scientific journal, Tyler.
I do read Science for Kids. No, but like I am interested in it, even if I don't always get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm totally down to cover this topic, finding that stuff going on in Star Trek. It'll require a little bit of research over the next week, though.
Yeah, it's not going to be a full episode, but we will definitely in our next episode include a segment at the end of the show talking about scientific errors. For me, this will be extra challenging because I am someone who does not read any scientific stuff or tech stuff. I was someone who had to take earth science to get his science credit in both high school and university.
What did I take? I took astronomy in university.
Oh, that was beyond my capabilities.
Okay. I liked that one. It was like astronomy 101. Yeah. So there you go.
For me, earth science was the hardest course I ever took. Oh. I never studied more for any class ever, and I walked out with a B-.
Oh, that's not bad. Yeah.
It's like one of the lowest grades I got. You know, like I was very good in my English classes, and then that was just like my killer course.
Never had like a semester where you just kind of slacked off?
No.
I remember it was for me semester 2 of year 2.
Okay.
I did not get great grades that semester myself.
Okay. No, so. I had a pretty good average.
Okay.
I think because I went to school quite a bit older, so I was like at that point, like, I gotta get this done. I'm paying for it myself.
Yeah, that's true.
So I had more of a can-do attitude. Had I gone to university right after high school, I would have bombed out big time.
Yeah, in all fairness to me, like, you and I, we met in school later on, like, in our lives. I think you were 29, I was 26.
Yeah.
I was taking school very seriously, like, because, again, I was paying for it. I was an adult. I wasn't, like, this 19-year-old who was just like, whatever, yeah. Dudes. I'll just here to have fun.
Yeah.
That's how I spoke back then as well, like Cartman.
Right.
So, okay, we'll tackle this question next week. And don't feel too much pressure, Cam. You can just bounce off some of the stuff that I maybe bring up, or we'll see.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Are you the second Canadian listener? Get in contact with us. Also, let us know what you think of the Star Trek Bad Boys. Do you agree with our pick?
Or even just let us know, are you a bad boy? We want to hear from you. Tell us what makes you a bad boy. How do you charm the ladies?
No, really, how? So, you can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Voyager Bad Boy Tom Paris Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N. N as in Nog is a bad boy. Come on, Cam, isn't he?
Oh, we forgot to even talk about him. Well, probably for good reason. Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Complete.